It's a half 10 on a Friday morning, and we've got a new segment up. We're looking at mental health and well-being. And in the studio, we've got from Far West Health, we've got Dr. Neil. How are you going, Doctor?
Going well, thank you very much.
That's the way, and it's good to have you on board to do this. We're going to basically have a look at a mental health issue each month, and today is going to be sleep, but first a little bit of your history, Dr. Neil.
Well, so I'm the clinical director of mental health, drug and alcohol, and I've been fortunate to work with Broken Hill and the Far West region for the last 18 months or so. It was supposed to be a six-month thing, but I seem to keep staying here. Originally it came from a old age psychiatry basis and then went into administrative psychiatry. These days I do a little bit of everything, psychotherapy, general adult and child and adolescent psychiatry, supervision, teaching, all those sorts of things, anything that gets me out here.
Yeah, cool. Is it a changing field psychology? I suppose there's always new stuff coming up.
Oh, all the time. It is a totally different practice that I'm doing now compared to just 5 years ago. The thing that a lot of people forget about psychiatry is that it's a very new thing in that a lot of, well, for one thing, we had no medications until the 1970s. So pretty much everything that we're doing in terms of the evidence base for any prescribed medication is only about 50 years old, which is not very long compared to everywhere else in medicine. Every few years, a new research comes out in terms of how we use things in the past that we weren't using them properly, new stuff that is coming out that potentially might be working, new psychotherapies, new medications, everything. For decades, if not centuries, psychiatrists had been very carefully writing down all the ways that people were unwell when they didn't really have any way to treat them. It's been a totally different game in recent times. Very, very rewarding. Very nice to see how stories can potentially change. The message that we still need to get out is that sometimes these stories can change and that people don't necessarily need to suffer in silence. And there are treatments available now that weren't available, if not 50 years ago, sometimes even a year ago.
Yeah, no, it's like technology with everything. And like I say, you've trial and error. That's the main thing to work things out, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the most challenging thing about psychiatry. We still don't have a nice blood test or investigation that tells us, use this particular medication and everything will be okay. It is, unfortunately, a really annoying trial and error process that can be very frustrating for patients. I read a study that suggested that the average mental health patient took 10 years before they could be found to be on definitive medication. Because that's sometimes how long it takes in terms of looking at the symptoms of all the different treatment options that have been tried. But one nice thing is that the trial and error doesn't mean that what was failed before is an outright failure. It tells us about what not to do next or what might have happened wrong. So if a person has a mental health issue that has tried a particular medication and it hasn't worked, it's really important to write it down. What happened, what dose, what was supposed to fix, what didn't get better, because that gives us information about what to try next. There are more than 40 different antidepressants right now on the market. There are at least 8 mood stabilizers out there. There are several antipsychotics. There's a whole host of different medications, and there are more than 160 different schools of psychotherapy. So even the talking therapies as well, if a particular one doesn't work, it might be about how it was implemented. It might have not been the right time. It might have been something to do with the setting at the time, or it might have been the wrong modality of therapy. Essentially, it is trial and error, but it is about carefully recording the trials until eventually you find something that does work. I'm reminded of a situation of a patient who was 73 years old and spent the last 30 years of her life in a nursing home, extremely unwell, and each year coming in to hospital for about a 3 month stay, very agitated and distressed. And we undertook a review of her to discover that she had never been on a mood stabilizer, and that what was thought to be a schizophrenia was probably a bipolar disorder. We started her on a mood stabilizer, and within a week, she seemed to improve. 2 weeks later, she was functioning normally, eating and drinking normally. And I saw her in the community about 2 months later, where she still lived in the nursing home, except that she was now a carer volunteer and would be supporting nursing home residents on their trips. It was a life that she had known for ages, but she had now improved so much that she was now virtually one of the staff. When she was brought into our service initially, she was on a walker. And then after that, she actually didn't need a walker. That's how much she did change. And it's awful that it took at least 30 years for the right sort of treatments to be located. And I don't want to pretend that miracles can always happen, but sometimes they do. And that's what makes the job so worthwhile.
Yeah, I can imagine the job satisfaction seeing that result.
It was amazing. I still think about her from time to time. And one of the great things about this job is that those are actually more the rule than the exception. We still see people who, a lot of things have been tried that just didn't work and being despondent, and they still somehow do change. And it is, I think, an incredible testament to the capacity of human beings to be able to tolerate adversity and to be able to push through despite how awful mental illness can be until something really greatly changes. I remember another patient who went through psychotherapy, and what he said to me at the end of the psychotherapy was, I really wish that I had done this 10 years ago, because I'm now thinking that the last 10 years were wasted and what kind of life I could have had. But the other problem I have is that I spent the last 10 years being a victim. I'm not really sure how to be normal, that suddenly the world is a totally different world. So it was a nice problem for him to have.
Yeah, like I say, there's lots of different options to go, but we better have a look at our subject today, which is sleep. So why are we looking at sleep?
So sleep is a universal phenomenon. It is something that pretty much everyone does. It robs about 30 to 50% of our lifespan. And it's probably something that we don't get enough of, but it has a really interesting connection with mental health. There's one simple thing that I'm going to clarify. All the mental illnesses are associated with impairment in sleep. Now, that doesn't go the other way around. It doesn't mean that if you can't sleep, you have a mental illness. It doesn't mean that. But there's a weird thing that if you have a depression, if you have a psychosis, if you have a manic episode, if you have a hypomanic episode, if you have a delirium, all of these psychiatric presentations, they're all associated with people having difficulty with sleep. So we want to try to make sure that everyone gets a good amount of sleep, but if you try things and they don't work out for at least about 3 to 5 days, there may be something else going on. Now, not necessarily psychiatric. We, of course, know about things like sleep apnea. So sometimes you need sleep studies because of physical things that are affecting how the body is getting to sleep and staying asleep. But a unusual thing about mental illness, which is the purpose of these conversations, is that sleep keeps on turning up as an incredibly important thing to watch out for. Together with the interesting thing that when you treat the mental illness, the sleep usually improves as a marker of whether or not you're doing the right thing. And that's not because the medication is sedating. It's because the thing that caused the sleep disturbance, which was the mental health issue, if it's properly treated, everything else gets better.
Cool. Yeah, I suppose my personal issue, I've been probably blind for 35 years now, and when I first had my accident, probably 2 or 3 years, I've just nodding off all the time. I suppose it's the message of your brain. It feels that your eyes are closed, so time to shut down. And I battled that, but now I've gone the other direction where I'd struggle to sleep, or if I sleep, it's short time, 4 hours at the most at night, and I'm a light sleeper, so if I wake up, I don't go back to sleep. It's a struggle, doctor.
Yeah. All right. So I presume you want my cutting edge information about the best ways to try to get to sleep?
Yes.
All right. So here it is, hot off the presses for your listener. It is milk. So there is a weird amount of literature which has identified repeatedly that drinking warm milk just before you go to sleep is associated with improvement in sleep. So we've always, so most people when growing up as kids have had mom and dad provide that to us, the warming cup of milk and heading to sleep afterwards. Now, I used to work at a at an inpatient unit in another facility, and we had huge guys coming in on every drug you can name, and probably quite a few that hadn't had names yet, where pretty much nothing we could give them would help them with sleep. We gave them all the same thing. We gave them hot milk with cinnamon. And the cinnamon, by the way, is mostly for flavor. There is a little bit of evidence that cinnamon is psychoactive, but if anything, it's perhaps a mild stimulant. But the strange thing, and I still remember this, that in the 6 weeks that I was there, I constantly saw it work. I saw these massive bikey types peacefully sleeping off a glass of warm milk every evening when they failed pretty much every other psychotropic that we could name. And I thought that this was so unusual, but it's just how the service had run things. In my private practice and with my older patients, I started prescribing warm milk and saying that so it comes with a few things. You have to have it very soon just before you go to sleep. I recommend taking about half a cup of milk, putting it in your microwave, experimenting with the timing so that it has to be quite hot, but obviously not scalding. It has to be drunk quite quickly. No additives, no sugar, honey, no sort of simple sugars because they actually interfere with the sleep process. I normally recommend nutmeg because it just to try to help with the flavor. Some of my patients use nutmeg or cinnamon. If you're lactose intolerant, alternatives are fine. The problem with soy milk is that it tends to be sweetened, so that is a problem. But generally, a proteinaceous, warm to hot substance that of a good amount of volume that is drunk just before you go to sleep. So I'd been prescribing that for about 10 years. I was really annoyed when someone decided to write it down and do a study in the British Medical Journal about 2 years ago in July that found out that it was a hypnotic agent. There are 7 studies which all found that it does improve the quality of one's sleep and make it more effective. The actual mechanism is unknown. There's a little bit floating about tryptophans, but there's not really that many tryptophans inside there to be able to excuse it. The heat seems to make a difference. The fact that milk is quite difficult for human beings to digest probably makes a difference as well. So the body is pushed into a state where it's trying to compensate for the increased heat that it suddenly got, and therefore it drops the core body temperature for a couple of minutes after that, together with the fact that it's trying to extract energy from this product, which is not that easy to digest, which means that there's less overall energy available, which also changes its metabolic state. Together with the routine and the ritual of doing something each night that is telling you, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to sleep.